Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, sports fans. It is Sunday, July 27th. I am your host, Ryan Stern. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bench. How's everyone doing tonight? I am your host, Ryan Stern. Once again, welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bench. We are brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. Check out BackSportsPage. Follow them on Twitter at BackSportsPage, Facebook.com/BackSportsPage. You can find me on Twitter at RStern33BSP. This is Beyond the Bench. You can follow Beyond the Bench on Twitter at Beyond the Bench or go to Facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. I've got a lot of football to talk about. Last week, we had the great John Laub, FootballDiehards.com, come on and break down the fantasy football relevance of the NFC East. Now we're going to get into the reality of that division. Team that won the division last year was the Philadelphia Eagles. And first of all, if anyone wants to call, talk, we are taking your football calls today. 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. Philadelphia Eagles coming off a division title and a lot of high hopes for this season. They did lose maybe their most notable player aside from LeSean McCoy. They did lose DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson has been one of the faces of that franchise for the last couple of years, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Philadelphia Eagles try and replace him. They are getting Jeremy Maclin back from his injury. They did draft Jordan Matthews in the first round, but neither one of them bring the explosiveness. Matthews has closer to the explosiveness that Jackson had than Maclin, but he does not have the experience. He did not come from a very high-octane, high-powered, high-tempo offense at Vanderbilt. And this is a very difficult, high-powered, high-octane offense, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Eagles try and replace someone who had one of his best seasons last year, one of his most productive seasons in DeSean Jackson. Riley Cooper had a breakout year last year as soon as Nick Foles took over. They seem to have a connection. And Riley Cooper isn't someone who you're going to think of as being the go-to wide receiver. And if Jeremy Maclin can't come back from what has really been an injury-plagued season, it's tough to believe Jeremy Maclin is going into his sixth season in the NFL. So, I mean, Jeremy Maclin, for someone who was, I believe Jeremy Maclin was a first-round draft pick out of Missouri. He hasn't lived up to it. Hasn't lived up to all of the hype because he hasn't been able to stay on the field, and that's been the major issue for him. Is he going to be able to stay on the field? If he doesn't, you're looking at a pretty bare core when it comes to the wide receivers. Other receivers that have any experience at actual game time. Aurelius Benn. Aurelius Benn was in a very weak Tampa Bay wide receiver core, and he couldn't break through there. So I don't see him having any sort of impact on this team. And then you're really the only other player that has any other experience is Brad Smith. Brad Smith is really made his name in the NFL as being one of the wildcat quarterbacks for the Jets. He was a quarterback when he went to Missouri, another Mizzou Tiger. But you knew that he wasn't going to play quarterback in the NFL. Brad Smith, definitely better suited as a wide receiver, but he hasn't even broken through at that position. The best that he's looked in the NFL was as the wildcat runner for the Jets. So the wide receiver position is going to be very interesting for the Eagles, and it's not something that I would consider to be a strength. Now, one thing that is a strength for the Eagles is their run game. And now it's not just the number one. We all know LeSean McCoy, he may be the top running back in the NFL. I don't think there's anyone as explosive as he is. Even Jamaal Charles and the season that he had last year, he's not the same type of runner that Adrian Peterson is, but Adrian Peterson is, I think, 4 or 5 years older than LeSean McCoy. And when you start getting up there in that age, I'm not trying to take anything away from Adrian Peterson, but I have to see it from him. I think we can, but I have to see it from him. I know what we're going to get out of LeSean McCoy. Out of LeSean McCoy, you're going to get 1,300 yards rushing. You're going to get 400 to 500 yards receiving, and that's the low end. So you're looking at almost a guaranteed 1,700 yards from scrimmage, assuming full health from LeSean McCoy. The only way that that won't happen is if the Eagles' wide receiver core doesn't blossom into the core that they had when DeSean Jackson was a member of the Eagles. And then you have Nick Foles. Nick Foles, 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. It was an epic season that he had last year. You cannot expect a quarterback to put up those numbers again. And I'm not saying he's going to go to... and remember, he didn't start... I think he came in week 4. I think he had 13 games. So 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You average that out. Maybe he throws another interception, but 2 a game, he's up to 32. You can't imagine that a quarterback is going to go 32 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. if anything, you find that it may be closer, especially with a weakened wide receiving court without DeSean Jackson. Maybe he falls into a 29-9 guy. 29-9 is a great season. But if Nick Foles is a 29-touchdown, 9-interception guy, that's a worse season than he had last year. And what the Eagles are going to need in order to retain the title as NFC East champions is they're going to need a better effort from their defense. They run a 3-4, and they have one of my Fletcher Cox was one of my favorite players coming out of the 2011 draft. I thought the Eagles got a steal with him. So he was one of the only consistent players that the Eagles had on defense last year. The rest of that defensive line isn't any good. It really isn't, whether it's on the end or up the middle. They did nothing to address the need. They have been two undrafted rookies. Undrafted rookies don't come in and start at nose tackle. It just doesn't happen. I can see the Eagles going on a downward slide because I think that the way that the Eagles want to run, they want to run as many offensive plays as possible. And with the way that their defense is aligned, teams are going to be able to run the ball, chew up clock, and play time control football. That's not what the Eagles want to do. They want to play a shootout. Look at the linebacking core. Trent Cole, he's going into his 11th season. You can't expect Trent Cole to be the same Trent Cole that he has been throughout his career, which has been a very good career. Connor Barwin, he's in my estimation, an underrated linebacker. But I think that, it's not that I think, I know that he hasn't produced the way that a lot of people have expected him to produce. Brandon Graham has just not developed into the pass rusher that they were expecting him to. But the only other player on that defense that I feel was the consistent player, the way that Fletcher Cox was on the line, was Michael Kendricks. And there was another steal that the same draft that the Eagles get Fletcher Cox, they do get Michael Kendricks. I think he clearly outplayed DeMeco Ryans. Both of them play inside linebackers in their 3-4 base defense. Michael Kendricks is a real good linebacker, and they need him to make a major leap forward. Because, again, you have a lot of unknowns. You don't know what Trent Cole is going to be like. You don't know what Connor Barwin is going to be like. You don't know if DeMeco Ryans is over the hill. And the rest of the names in that crew just don't excite you. And then the secondary. The secondary is one of the scariest parts of this defense. Sure, Bradley Fletcher had a couple good games. Sure, Kerry Williams had a couple good games. They got eaten alive. That defense was bad. And they need to take a major step. Those two, Kerry Williams and Bradley Fletcher, need to have major improvement seasons. Because, again, there just isn't
a lot there. I think teams are going to be able to move the ball at will against this defense, unless you start to see Michael Kendricks and Fletcher Cox go from really good players to superstar players, because the Eagles need those two to become superstar players in order for their defense to be any good. Back at safety, they sign Malcolm Jenkins. Was he all that good? Malcolm Jenkins played for the Saints, and we all know that the Saints' defense has never been its specialty. So maybe he looked good because he was the best player in a very down group. I don't think Malcolm Jenkins helps out that team as much as other people will. Nate Allen, I don't. He doesn't excite me either. Don't be surprised if this team takes a step backward. I can see this team being an 8-8 team. And speaking of 8-8, let's move over to Captain 8-8, Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. Three consecutive years, the Cowboys have finished 8-8 and on the outside looking in. Tony Romo is coming off major back surgery. And Tony Romo is going into his 13th year in the NFL. It's hard to believe, because Tony Romo was a backup for so long. Tony Romo is going into his 13th season in the NFL. Last year, he had, tremendous stats. And he threw for over 3,800 yards, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. You have a 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio. That's a real good season. And we didn't see as many of those key mistakes that you really saw in years past. What you saw is him taking way too many sacks. And that reared its ugly head game 15, and he was not even able to play in the season finale against the Eagles to try and win the division. Kyle Orton, we'll get into Kyle Orton, had to come in and play the final week of the season because Tony Romo's injury was too much for him to go on. I don't think Tony Romo will ever be the same that he ever was. Tony Romo is as much grief as Tony Romo gets, and there have been times where he's deserved all of the grief that he's gotten because he has made some bonehead mistakes late in games when the team has a chance to win. And you really only saw that one or two times last year, and the one time that really sticks out is the game against the Broncos. What people failed to remember is Tony Romo threw 5 touchdowns in that game before he threw that interception. But what people remember, and this is the reason why Tony Romo will always be remembered for this, is because he threw the late interception that cost them the game. I mean, Tony Romo in 2012 threw for almost 5,000 yards. He's a good quarterback. But he needs help. He really needs help. And what the Cowboys did in the first round, I thought was risky but genius. Because they need so many other... they need to fill so many other holes, especially on their defense, that they took a risk by not taking a defensive player. But they took the best player on the board, and that was Zach Martin. Zach Martin can play four or five positions on that offensive line. I'm not sure whether or not he's ready to play at left tackle right now in the NFL. But he can play anywhere from left guard all the way over to right tackle. And I think the Cowboys realize that they're not going anywhere if Tony Romo cannot stay healthy. And in order to keep Tony Romo healthy, you need to build a better offensive line. So Zach Martin comes in. He's going to help that team. But what he's not going to be able to do is stop other teams. Look at what the Cowboys lost last year. They lose Jason Hatcher along their defensive line. They lose DeMarcus Ware, one of the who has been their best defensive player for years. And they expect to go into a season with Barry Church is he's an okay safety, but who's going to play alongside him? It's going to be Matt Johnson. It's going to be Jeff Heath, Jakar Hamilton, Ahmad Dixon. Who's going to play alongside him? And then you look at one of their strengths on defense is their cornerbacks. They've got two starting quarterbacks, starting caliber quarterbacks, and Brennan Carr, Morris Claiborne. Who's going to play in the slot? Landos Kendrick is done. B.W. Webb, I thought, was one of the more overrated players in last year's draft. I think the slot guy and Brandon Carr, there were times where he got beat. Morris Claiborne got beat. The two of them are good cornerbacks. They're not shutdown guys. They're not going to be able to take the team, tell the team, get on their shoulders, we'll carry you. Not going to happen. The defensive line is awful. Their best player is going to be a rookie who was drafted in the third round, who I think was a pretty good steal. DeMarcus Lawrence out of Boise State, I think he's going to be pretty good. I'm not expecting him to be great yet, but you're going to have a rookie start at right end. That just doesn't happen. Anthony Spencer, who knows if he can stay healthy. The defensive tackle position, they bring in Henry Melton, who hasn't played a full season in the last 3 years. Who knows how he's going to be able to come back. Nick Hayden, this may be one of the worst, and their best defensive player is Sean Lee, and he's out for the year because in the first play of OTAs, they decide to run a screen. Zach Martin loses his way, gets in the way of Sean Lee. Sean Lee tears his ACL, out for the year. Their best player on defense is out for the year. Their best player on a really bad defense is out for the year. The Cowboys' defense was one of the three worst in NFL history last year. And they're not going to have their best player all year. I know Sean Lee was in and out of the lineup all year last year. His defense is going to be worse. You're taking DeMarcus Ware out of the fold. You're taking Jason Hatcher out of the fold. You're taking Sean Lee out of the fold. This is a worse defense than it was last year which was historically bad. And when you talk, when you want to talk about historically bad, it's a great segue into the next team. And that next team is the New York Giants. And last year, the play of the New York Giants offensive line was historically bad. People want to give Eli Manning flack for the season that he had last year. You tell me how you are going to have a good season when you're running for your life the entire season, when your wide receivers are running wrong routes, when you have no run game. And not all of the fact that the Giants had no run game was because of the running backs. A lot of it was because of the historically bad play of that offensive line. The one bright spot from the offensive line last year was last year's first-round draft pick, Justin Pugh. Justin Pugh showed that he's one of, that he can be one of the top right tackles in the league. And then the Giants, they really made some improvements along that line coming into the year this year. They bring in J.D. Walton, who last played for the Broncos, to play center. They draft Weston Richburg in the second round. Weston Richburg was the number one center on my board. They're also having Weston Richburg play some guard at camp. So they're going to determine whether or not they feel that Weston Richburg, that, and it's all going to be up to J.D. Walton. If J.D. Walton can prove that he can handle the center spot at a competent level, Weston Richburg is going to start at guard. Retirement of Chris Snee. Chris Snee has been the anchor of that defense, of that offensive line over at right guard for 10 years. And we wish Chris Snee all the best in his retirement. You know he's going to have something to do with that team. Tom Coughlin's son-in-law, but he was, I feel, one of the most underrated offensive linemen in the NFL. That, and there was a picture that Sean O'Hara tweeted out that was awesome. And it was pretty much saying that the final member of that, the Super Bowl 42 offensive line is now done. And that line of Kareem McKenzie, Rich Seibert, Sean O'Hara, Chris Snee, and David Deal was one of the absolute most underrated offensive lines in the history of the NFL. The consistency of that line, and you see that that's what the Giants were lacking, consistency. So now they also bring in Jeff Schwartz, who was one of the more versatile offensive linemen on the Kansas City Chiefs last year, and the Chiefs had one of the best offensive lines in the game. I think Jeff Schwartz has the capability to go in and be that right guard to take over the Chris Snee spot. I think the biggest question mark of this, of the Giants offensive line in camp, is going to be John Jerry. If John Jerry can get onto the field and push for that left guard spot, the Giants are a better team if Weston Richburg starts at center. Because if Weston Richburg starts at center, that means there was someone good enough that was better than him at the guard, and you know that he's better than J.D. Walton at center. I think if John Jerry can get healthy and prove that he's a starting caliber guard, he'll play the left guard spot, Jeff Schwartz play right guard, and Weston Richburg handle center. You know, you have Justin Pugh anchoring the right side at tackle, and then you all hold your breath and wonder whether or not Will Beatty is going to return to being the Will Beatty that the Giants paid a lot of money for. He's getting $8 million a year, and $8 million a year tackles don't give up 10 sacks in a year. That's what he did last year. They did bring in Charles Brown to push Will Beatty, but Charles Brown, if you recall, who started last year as the tackle for the New Orleans Saints, got pushed out of his job by a rookie, Teron Armstead, who if you remember, had the freakish combine last year. But he got pushed out by a third-round rookie. So I'm not sure whether or not Charles Brown is worthy of a starting spot, but he's an insurance policy for whether or not Will Beatty can get back onto the field, recovering from the broken leg that he suffered in the final week of the season. 760-283-0846. This is Beyond the Bench. We are taking your NFL calls. We are finishing up our NFC East preview. We're tackling the New York Giants right now. Giants have a new offense. Ben McAdoo comes in, former Green Bay Packer quarterback coach, is going to try and bring some of the same philosophies that the Green Bay Packers used over to the New York Giants. And this is one of the reasons why I think the New York Giants are one of the most difficult teams to put your finger on as to what they're going to be this year. This is Eli Manning's 11th year. It's hard to believe that class of Eli, Roethlisberger, Rivers is going into their 11th season. And this is the first time in Eli Manning's professional career that he's not running a Kevin Gilbride offense. I think that the up-tempo West Coast, get the ball out of your hand quick, receiver, and one of the things that really stuck out to me was I was listening to an interview with Eli Manning, and he was saying that that he feels what the best part about this offense is that the wide receivers don't have options. Everything was an option with Kevin Gilbride. What route they were going to run was all determined by what coverage was seen by the wide receiver and the quarterback. And you saw that last year, especially with routes run by Reuben Randle. Randle and Eli were both reading different things. Now everything is just defined. You have a route that you're going to run, and you have to then go out and beat your guy. And I think the simplicity of that is going to help in the development of the new faces along the offensive line. The one player that the Giants need to get into camp is Odell Beckham Jr. In OTAs, he had a little hamstring issue. It just hasn't gotten any better. So Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be an integral part of this offense. We all know what Victor Cruz is going to bring. The question marks are going to be, does the new offense suit Ruben Randle better, which I think it should, and does Jarrell Jernigan build on the phenomenal finish that he had last year and carry that into this year and start to see more regular playing time? And I think the absence of Odell Beckham helps Jarrell Jernigan immensely because he's going to get more looks in three receiver sets. And one thing that I think the Giants really need to be worried about is the tight end position. In the Packers system, the West Coast offense, the tight end is an integral part of the offense. And the Giants don't have a proven tight end right now. They have a guy who is really known for his physical ability rather than his play at tight end, and Adrian Robinson. Daniel Fells has had a decent career. Kellen Davis is more of a blocking tight end. But the kid that you're really going to get a good look at this training camp from the Giants is going to be the undrafted free agent Xavier Grimble from USC. I think he's got a shot to make the team. I think he's got a shot to be the starter. And we all know that Eli Manning, up until last year with Brandon Myers, Eli Manning can make unknown tight ends really good. You saw what he did with Kevin Boss. You saw what he did with Martellus Bennett. Eli Manning can make, and even Bear Pascoe, showed glimpses of being a decent tight end. But I think with the offensive line situation, you may see Kellen Davis get a little more work because they may need him to stay, they may need their tight ends to block more often. And if they're going to use a tight end for blocking, Kellen Davis is the best. He's by far the best blocking tight end that they have on their roster. Over to the defensive side of the ball, I think their defensive line should be fine. Jason Pierre-Paul looks healthy, sounds healthy, sounds like he's ready to get back to his defensive player of the year caliber play. I think DeMontre Moore is ready to step up. I think Mathias Kiwanuka is a real good fill-in. And they also brought in Robert Ayers. And Robert Ayers is going to be a real nice addition to the left defensive end spot. Because I think he's a one. I think last year he was one of the top defensive ends against the rush for the Denver Broncos. So I think they have four capable defensive ends. And that's one thing that the Giants will always utilize is depth. At defensive tackle, Cullen Jenkins is going to definitely be the guy. It's going to be an interesting battle for the other starting spot. I think it's going to end up be between Jonathan Hankins and Marcus Kuhn. Jay Bromley, third-round draft pick out of Syracuse, I think it has a chance to make some hay and get some playing time. But I really think it's going to be Cullen Jenkins and Jonathan Hankins as the two defensive tackles that see most of the work. Marcus Kuhn's going to get in there. Mike Patterson's going to get in there. But I think the defensive line is going to be fine for the Giants. The linebacking core, that's you always wonder if the Giants are going to do enough at linebacker. And they don't use high draft picks at that position. They haven't drafted a linebacker in the first round since Carl Banks in 84. but there is one kid that is really opening up eyes, and that's the fifth-round draft pick out of USC, and that's Devon Kennard. Every report that I read out of camp is that this kid's a hitting machine. And with John Beeson starting camp on pup, he's the key. John Beeson's the key to this defense. Look at what they did. I mean, the Giants started 0-6. He played in the Week 6 loss to the Bears, but that defense was able to shut down Matt Forte, and a lot of that was due to John Beeson. And after that game, because remember, he came to the team midweek, so he didn't even have a full practice with the team. Once John Beeson was familiar with the defense, the Giants finished the season 7-3. And John Beeson was one of the main reasons that that team finished the year winning 7 of their final 10. He had the foot issue that they're saying doesn't need surgery, and they're hoping he can be back for week 1. They better not rush John Beeson back. I'd rather see him sit out week 1, even though it's against an offensive powerhouse like the Lions. I'd rather see him make his first start when he's 100% healthy. And if he's 100% healthy for week 1, then the Giants, I think, are all set to be one of the better defenses in the NFC this year. Because I think with Beeson and then filling out around him, you have Jameel McClain coming over from Baltimore, who I think is an upgrade at the position. Spencer Paisinger coming off a real good finish to the year last year. Devon Kennard, who may be able to start for this team. Jaquan Williams, who is one of the better running linebackers in coverage. I think the linebacking core, as long as Beeson is there and healthy, is going to be just fine. And the Giants' secondary is going to be, I feel, one of the better secondaries in the game. Now, Walter Thurman came out and said that they're going to have the best secondary in the NFL. I think they can be a top five. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie comes in. Walter Thurman comes in. They still have Prince Amukamara, so that's and Tremaine McBride, who rated out as the second best cornerback in the league last year among when he was able to get on the field. So now you're talking about four real capable cornerbacks, and then you have Antrell Roll and the return of Stevie Brown. Over at safety, they also brought in Quentin Demps, who is going to help out at safety and in the return game, which the Giants really need. They did draft Nat Bury. I think that the Giants' defense is primed to be the best defense in the NFC East, and I don't think it's even close. The only other team that I think has any shot of being as good on defense as the Giants is the final team in the NFC East, and that's the Washington Redskins. The Washington Redskins are all about one player, and that's Robert Griffin III. If Robert Griffin III can come back and play to a similar capability of his rookie year, they're going to be fine. Alfred Morris, I think part of the reason why he struggled at times last year is because no teams were fearing that Robert Griffin III was going to tuck the ball and take off with it. So that if they were able to read a run, they were able to focus on Alfred Morris. I'm not saying that we're going to see the same zone read that we saw in RG3's rookie year. But I think a healthy RG3 will garner enough attention to open up some holes for Alfred Morris to have a similar season that he had in his rookie year, which was the same year as RG3's. And now they have two dynamic playmakers at wide receiver. They bring in rival DeSean Jackson. They have the guy who caught the most passes in the NFL last year in Pierre Garçon. And I really don't think, I mean, even though they did bring in Andre Roberts, who I think is the best third wide receiver that they've had in a long time, because I don't think Santana Moss has anything left. I don't know how many three receiver sets we're going to see, because I think they really like running. I think having Darryl Young as their fullback and using him in the backfield along with Alfred Morris and their up-and-coming tight end, Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed is, I talked about him with John Laub last week. Jordan Reed's going to be pretty good. He's going to be a guy that if you're willing to wait on tight ends, Jordan Reed's going to be a guy that you're going to look to snag. Because I think he runs the routes that you really saw Logan Paulson run for success in RG3's rookie year. But Jordan Reed is so much more athletic than Logan Paulson is. Paulson's still on the team, but Jordan Reed is the guy there. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see more pro sets out of the Redskins this year than we have in the past. You look at their defense. Their defensive line is it's average. It's nothing spectacular, but what they really rely on is the play of their linebackers. They do run the 3-4. And they have two of my favorite, even though they're on a rival team, I really don't like the Redskins. Ryan Kerrigan and Brian Orakpo, if they're on the field, those are playmakers. They draft Trent Murphy to bolster the middle of that linebacking core. They have Barry Cofield to play the nose tackle. Their defense isn't bad. I don't think it is as talented as the Giants. But you look at David Amerson, I think, has the ability to step up and have a real good year this year. D'Angelo Hall's at the end of his career. They did bring in Tracy Porter, who's going to get some time in a corner. I don't see that they have as much talent as the Giants, but they're clearly better than the Eagles or the Cowboys on defense. But the real question to this team is whether or not they can get back to the offensive powerhouse that they were in 2012. Now, for my bold predictions for the NFC East, I said the Giants are the team that I really have had the hardest time figuring out this offseason. I just think that everything is primed for them to make a run at this division. I don't think the Eagles are going to be as good as they were last year. I think the Cowboys are going to be worse than they were last year. And I think the Redskins are part of the reason why you may see the Eagles drop back, because I think they're closer to the Eagles than they were last year, too. If the new offense, and that's a big if this new offense that Ben McAdoo brings to the Giants is one that they can pick up quickly, and remember, we're going to see it next week. 7 days from now, we're going to be in the fourth quarter getting a good look at the third-teamers. Giants-Bills, Hall of Fame game, Canton, Ohio, be on the bench, will be at the Hall of Fame game next week. We will not be broadcasting to you next Sunday. We will be back next Monday with a recap of Hall of Fame weekend and a breakdown of the NFC South. But back to bold predictions, I think the Giants finish this season. And if you look at schedules, and a lot of times you really see the Giants have an easy early and then a real difficult end. The Giants have a relatively winnable first half. Then they have a murderer's row for 3 weeks. And then they have a relatively winnable final six games. Aside from when they play in a three-week span, the Colts, the Seahawks, and the 49ers, two of which are at home, the Colts and 49ers. The Lions will be a tough game on a Monday night to open the season. The Cardinals have a good defense, who they play week two. Then you look, the Texans, they're beatable. The Redskins are beatable. The Falcons are beatable. In Philly, division games are so tough, you can't predict ahead of time with NFC divisional games. But you look, the Giants' first three divisional games are all on the road. So that means their final three division games at the end of the year, when they sort of mean more, are all at home. And that may favor the Giants. But would it surprise anyone if you look at the Giants, Lions, Cardinals, Texans, Redskins, Falcons, Eagles, Cowboys? Would it surprise you if the Giants were 5-2 or 4-3? I think they need to be a minimum 4-3. If they have any ideas of winning this division, they have to be at least 4-3 going into the bye after the Cowboy game week 7. They have to be at least 4-3 because you never know what... And then if they can steal one of the games against the Colts, Seahawks, 49ers, I think the Colts are beatable on the road. So it's a Monday night game. Giants have been much better on Monday nights than they used to be. So the Colts come in on Monday night, and then the Giants have to play the Seahawks and 49ers back-to-back weeks. So if they can steal one of those three, if they open up 4-3, steal one of those three, then you're looking at 5-5 after 10 weeks. Then you're closing out the season, home Cowboys, at Jacksonville, at Tennessee, home Redskins, at Rams, home Eagles. They can win five of those six, and then you're looking at a 10-6 season, which I think is absolutely doable. The Giants can win 10 or 11 games this year. And I'm going to say 10. I think the Giants win 10 games and win the NFC East. I think the Eagles finish 8-8. I think the Redskins finish 8-8. And I think the Dallas Cowboys finish 4-12. And I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to regret either not drafting a defensive player or Johnny Manziel at number 16. I want to thank everyone for tuning in for another episode of Beyond the Bench. We will be back next Monday, the day after the Hall of Fame game. Come back with a recap of Hall of Fame weekend. As I said, Beyond the Bench will be in attendance for the Hall of Fame enshrinement ceremony and for the Hall of Fame game, the preseason game between the Giants and the Bills. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp. Follow the show on Twitter at Beyond the Bench for live look-ins at the events of Hall of Fame weekend, also for pictures for those of you who have not been to the NFL Hall of Fame. It'll be my first time in Canton, so I'm definitely going to take a lot of pictures. Again, make sure you follow at Beyond the Bench at rstern33bsp. I'll get those pictures out there for you. Remember, check out backsportspage.com, at backsportspage. Facebook.com/backsportspage, Facebook.com/beyondthebenchBSP. So until next Monday, I would like to tell you to have a nice day.